He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello, to our listeners, and this week's Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. I'd like to start off this week's show with a few trivial items that I've picked up over the last several days, and they will be of either no interest or maybe have some type of interest for the people when they hear what the topics are. The first topic is, and I may have said this on a much earlier show, does anybody know what the average speed of driving their cars over a significant amount of time ends up being? Having looked at my Hyundai Sonata, which has now got roughly 108,000 miles on it and has never had the average miles per gallon part on the computer reset, it said this week's show, it was 34.8 miles per gallon. I mean, miles per hour. Average speed, the car has gone over 108,000 miles. And that I did say in an earlier show that it roughly was in the 30s. I think I said between 33 and 35, no matter how you drove. And this includes a lot of long-distance driving in the car, but it has never gotten out of 35 miles per hour. If it did, it's back down to below that.
That's
trivial number one. Trivial number two is I had the chance to stop into the Toyota dealer because I saw the new Land Cruisers sitting on the lot. Toyota has considerably revamped what used to be a very much of a functional off-road vehicle in the Land Cruiser in the older versions. And they've now functionalized it and fashionized it and made it much more modern with all the new technology and engines and all that. And with that has come a very high increase, in my opinion, price over what they might have been maybe as early as or as recently as 5 years ago. The two that were on the lot in this particular Toyota dealer were $69,000 and the other was $75,000. They look very functionally practical for possibly taking them off-road, but they are much smoother looking in their physical appearance than the older versions were. This has happened in the Range Rover in the Land Rover department too over the years, and tends to happen in many types of vehicles that once had a more rugged look to them than the newer versions do these days. Although there's been some coming back to the former older look by some manufacturers. Land Rover may be the one I'm thinking of. That's trivial point number two. You want to add?
I want to add that it's not only the looks that may or may not be rugged. They used to be very rugged vehicles, and you are a recent witness of that when you traveled to Africa and got to ride in those older Toyota vehicles. It'll be interesting to see if those vehicles will still be the vehicles of choice in those parts of the world where, you know, the roads are very not paved. The service centers are few and far between. It'll just be interesting. We know with the Land Rover Defender that that vehicle has become, I think, like what I would call an urban or suburban vehicle, and no longer is the tough vehicle or simple vehicle that you can take out in the middle of nowhere. In the case of the Land Rover Defender, we've seen new manufacturers come and duplicate or replicate or copy what the Land Rover Defender used to be, namely Ineos with their Grenadier. We'll see what Toyota does in other parts of the world. And I'm jumping from one thing to another with that, is that, as you've mentioned before, Robin, the problem with these very high-tech new vehicles is that when you do hit something or when something does happen, they are very, very complex to repair, and also it gets very expensive very quickly. Just as an anecdote, I was reading this morning about one of the car magazines hitting a deer with a new BMW It happened to be an electric vehicle, but I don't think this matters much, with an i4. And the tab for hitting the deer came up to a staggering $17,000.
$17,000?
$17,000, when it was all said and done.
Well,
and it was $3,000 for the headlight, and I thought mine was bad at $800. And there was around $2,000 for the radar in the front of the car. So,
well,
and I know you've brought up this point so before.
I will continue with it because vehicles like the Kia Stinger, for example, was also one of the vehicles that, as many as 3 years ago, had a extremely high repair cost if you were to have an accident. That particular model of the Kia Optima. The Stinger was a very high-performance version, sort of like the Hyundai N line of vehicles, which is now a performance line of vehicles in the Hyundai line, which appeals or theoretically appeals to high-performance type of drivers and people who want the fastest versions of a particular model that both Kia and Hyundai make in their lineup of cars. But as you said, along with what's going on in the technological world, with all the cameras that are scattered about, the Audi A5 convertible has a 360-degree camera. I don't know how they make you being able to see it from a roofline level of a car. I guess it's above. I don't think there's a drone hanging over the car as I'm driving it down the road. Ha, ha, ha. But it's amazing. I mean, it's not the only vehicle that's got this feature. But when you do get hit in places where these cameras are located, they actually, the body shops, I think some body shops are pulling in specialists of camera alignment people and sensor alignment people to recalibrate cars that they may repair in their shop. I do not know what our local Sharon Auto Body Shop does with that kind of thing right now, but I have read about it in periodicals. So back to the trivial parts of things. I looked at the new Tacoma pickup trucks also in this dealership. I did not walk around them. I was driving out after having looked close up at the Land Cruisers or Land Rover, I mean Toyota Land Cruisers, and noticed that below the bumper in the front of the pickups that I saw, there was a lower, I don't know whether they were plastic or what, even lower sort of a, some kind of wind dam or something that was underneath, which I do not know what that adds to ruggedness of a Tacoma pickup truck. To me, it makes them more vulnerable to these high curbs that you pull up to in front of a post office or a market or something like that. I did not measure the height of the lowest part of those things that I saw. But I did think, what happens if you hit a rock, if you're crawling off-road somewhere in the woods, or you hit a log, or you hit any kind of higher than, well, anything higher than 4 or 5 inches off the ground, what happens to these particular parts of the front end that are dangling below the bumper line of a pickup truck that is supposed to be able to go have high ground clearance and maybe go off-road?
Did you actually venture to this car dealership on a Sunday afternoon when nobody was chasing you on the lot?
Or? That is correct.
But you're on camera.
That is correct.
You know that, right?
And that's about it for those three sort of pieces of information. Only people who are really car or truck knowledgeable are going to have any interest in that, except that I have noticed also, Jane, I think you have too, that the car lots in new car dealerships are pretty well loaded with lots of vehicles right now. And there's an article in one of my periodicals saying how expensive it is to finance cars at 6%+ over what we used to be able to do it at, which was as low as 3% or 3.25% for over 3 or 4 years. And that may be what's sort of stifling car sales in both new car and used car purchases. Used car rates are usually, interest rates for financing cars are higher than new cars rates, mostly because you can get some very good new car rates through the manufacturer, which you cannot do on used car lots.
So let me first of all, I think the market is back to pre-COVID trends.
Yes.
We thought we'd learn something during COVID, but no, we're back to mass producing and filling up lots and then try to sell what's on the lot. And here we are in a market that's kind of softening, and there are probably a lot of deals to be made out there. And I was wondering if you had been to any dealerships and had looked at any deals, because I know you like doing that. And you mentioned the other day a lease deal on an Audi on their electric vehicles.
Well, that was an old lease deal for a Q5, which is an SUV version of Audi vehicles, where they had a, I think it was a clearance offer on older models that got that have been replaced by newer versions of the same model. Newer probably meaning better battery life or something or other, higher cost to build, where it was between $400 and $500 to lease a Q5 e-tron for 3 years. And, of course, you have to put a substantial amount of money down. I think it was around $5,000 down before you started those $450 leases. That particular lease rate was researched by a family member and found to be the inventory on them was zero nationwide, and nothing like that has come on up in the Audi system since then for the equivalent model of the Q5. I think it's called the Q45 now. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but lease rates are the major way to get a new car at lower than financing rate monthly payments, although you do have to put, in many cases, $3,000 down and up for leases of many of the new cars that can be leased at rates between $300 and $500 a month, if you think that's cheap.
Well,
you were at the track recently, Jay. Anything major to talk about?
Well, always things happening here at Lime Rock Park. This past weekend, Saturday, I was at a Porsche Club event. The Connecticut Valley region of the Porsche Club was holding their big yearly event at the track, and several things were happening. There was an autocross in the B paddock. There was driver education going on the track, and there was a car show on the midway in the grass, alongside the midway. And I was there as a vendor. I also had my car that was not exhibited, and I could have just by parking it, along with all the other cars. But hundreds of very, very nice older Porsches. 911s mostly, but also, the Boxers and also SUVs and electric Taycans.
Were there some electric Taycans there?
Yeah,
sure. Was there track time available to you or just the Porsche Club members?
Well, it was a Porsche Club event, so, they had rented the facility for the day, and so it was, I'm going to say, Porsche Club members on track. Some cars that were on track were not Porsches, but that's because members are allowed to bring
any car they own, right?
Yeah.
How about Jay DeMarkin? Was he allowed on the track, and did he engage the track with his vehicle?
Jay DeMarkin was working on the midway, so Jay DeMarkin did not get on track. But that is in the plan with Jay DeMarkin's car.
I'm sure it is, and I can't wait for a report in our show.
But this brings me to, old Porsches, electric cars, and the two meet. Inadvertently, I stumbled upon a YouTube video of a test of an electric Porsche. So this was a 1992, I think, Porsche 911 convertible that was modified by a company right here in Lakeville, Connecticut. And this company modifies old Porsches and installs an electric power plant. and I believe it's a Tesla motor. I'm not sure what the battery pack is, but the car is wicked fast, and also it's, you know, it has the coolness of the electric, you know, electric car features, which is, it's really, really quiet and does everything very efficiently. Now, there's a, you know, is it ethically or morally correct to swap an air-cooled flat six in a 911 with an electric motor? That's debatable, but this is something we can do with older classic cars. And, you know,
older any cars, I think, actually.
Well, yes, and I remember a while ago I told you, we had discussed this, I had said that, you know, you should consider doing that when you still had your Bricklin and replacing a vintage Ford motor with a modern electric
correct.
Power plant. So anyway, I've gone from, you know.
Is the public allowed in when the track has these private events, or what if a public person knows that the Porsche Club is there and wants to drive in to see what's going on?
Track,
can they get through without paying a fee?
I honestly do not know.
Okay.
Porsche Club, in particular, does not advertise or no longer advertises their
events.
They specifically require Lime Rock Park, and I think it's a policy across the country. They require their events to be private, so they're not advertised. But I think there's got to be a liability issue behind that.
Yeah. I'm sure there is, but I don't know what liability issues and driving on the track properly.
I don't know that you are not allowed to go in. I honestly don't know.
Right.
Speaking of the track, we know we're only about 4 weeks away from the historic festival, which, you know, I think is the greatest event.
That's in August.
August 30th to September 2nd, and I think it is the 42nd edition of the historic festival.
This was in the year 2024 for listeners who might hear this show sometime in the future after the date that this event is happening.
And although that's a few weeks away, you know, we know the schedule. As usual, there'll be a car parade through the streets of Lakeville and Salisbury, and ending up at in the center of Falls Village on that Thursday, and then racing on Friday, Saturday, and Monday, and then a big car show on the Sunday, which I think will be September 1st, probably. I don't have a calendar in front of me. And it's always a great event. If there's one event people should go to, that would be it, in my opinion. So that's it for the track.
Well, I'll continue on something. This is for Corvette aficionados and fans who know all about those vehicles far more than I do. But I am looking at the 25 Corvette ZR1, which Corvette listeners will already know is out for 2025. And it has I don't know whether it's astounding or not, but it's a stupid in my idea, 1,064 horsepower in the particular ZR1 model I'm reading about. We talked in a recent show about what I think both UJ and I sort of think is somewhat ridiculous about these, I won't say stupid, I just said it, overpowered vehicles that can brag about going from 0 to 60 as long as their wheels can have traction on the ground they're on in under 3 seconds, or maybe, I don't know whether it's gotten down to under 2 seconds yet or not. But, you know, I guess anybody who buys this particular model of the Corvette wants to have it for reasons other than the fact it has 1,064 horsepower, I hope. But it just continues. The automakers are continuing to rival each other, whether they're electric or hybrids or gasoline, trying to get their vehicles to go 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds or under 2.5 seconds. I don't know what the fastest one is, Jay. You might.
It's right
around. That's the Corvette listeners.
And you know, we talk about this all the time. It's kind of ridiculous and kind of pointless. I mean, it's one thing having a vehicle that can go up a hill and make a pass. you know, in a short distance or short period of time, that's useful. But, you know, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, quarter miles in 10 seconds is just is insane. To your point, you know, the new Mercedes just came out with a their SL convertible.
Right.
And it now, in hybrid mode, makes, you know, over 800 horsepower. It also weighs close to 5,000 pounds, you know, for a 2+2-seater. And yes, it goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds or.
I do note that the weight of these vehicles, these electric vehicles, or even the hybrids with big battery packs, are notably absent in the weight information department, except probably in fine print in someplace in the vehicle's informative packet.
So I was just reading about the performance EVs of the year. I think it was either Motor Trend or Car and Driver came out with the list, and you know the vehicles you would expect to find there in their list, you know, the Tesla Model S Plaid, which by the way used to cost $140,000, now it's under $100,000, which is still a lot of money, but for the level of performance is actually a bargain price. The BMW i4, the Kia EV6 GT, there's a GT version of the Mustang Mach-E, and the new Porsche Taycan Turbo S, which costs over $200,000. Those cars are all blistering fast, but none of them, they don't test them on track because they're not good at running, you know, any length of time at maximum performance. They deplete the batteries very quickly, and then they end up not being able to charge them. And so I think the performance of an electric vehicle is useful in everyday driving. It's nice to have that extra power, but it's especially nice, I think, to just have a vehicle that's quiet and can do things effortlessly. And that's the point of electric vehicles. In my opinion.
Well, it's a good opinion.
By the way, speaking of the industry, you know, Tesla's market share has dropped below 50% for the first time in 2024. I think it's just because there are more and more offerings on the market. There are also, you know, stats that are thrown out that, you know, half of the people who trade in their Teslas go back to gas-powered cars. But those, you have to read between the lines of some of these statistics.
I agree. You do have to read between the lines, Jay. But there's obviously a lot more competition. one of the other things I think that people are realizing is that Tesla doesn't have a regular service organization for dealing with problems that develop in Tesla vehicles, whereas if you buy the e-trons and the Mercedes and the other manufacturers who have dealerships and sell these vehicles there, are certainly more prevalent all throughout the country if a problem develops. They don't have to call for some kind of roadside service necessary except maybe to be towed
so let
to
me
a
interrupt
dealer.
You right
but there's
there.
A dealer in these manufacturers in far more convenient places countrywide than there are for Teslas.
But hold that thought for a second, because I actually ran into a Tesla owner this weekend, and this is a person who has a Tesla Model S, so the original, the first Tesla that came out in 2013.
12 or 10.
2012. And he bought this car used for $20,000, and it had 50,000 miles. So it was a $100,000 car when he bought it. He added 60,000 miles in very little time, and this is where I was getting to with the. He did have one issue with the car, and honestly, I don't even remember what it was. But he mentioned that the store in Westchester County, in New York, none of them in Connecticut, as we know, had impeccable service, and whatever the issue was, the car was way out of warranty. And Tesla actually covered everything under warranty. So he had only great things to say about their, you know, their customer service.
Well, that's certainly encouraging. But as we know, again, his car is probably in the Westchester area when it's that's where he lives, so he's near that particular service place. Anyways, as more and more electric vehicles come online, and every time somebody buys one and falls in love with it, it probably leads to more sales of that particular one. That this the buyer giving you a glowing report about it. Here's this kind of thing. That's certainly a glowing report about Tesla service. We have a local citizen in our listing area, a woman who had one of the first Teslas out, and she has had two motors replaced, all under Tesla. She will not buy another new one because it doesn't come in the color she got, and she still gets free charging lifetime, which is no longer available in Tesla to Tesla buyers. So she is loving her Tesla. She loves the color. She has had minimal. She's got well over 100,000 miles on it, and she has nothing but good things to say about the Tesla from that standpoint either. And hers is an S, just like your person was.
So what's your tip of the week for safety?
My tip of the week is, well, I don't really have a tip of the week. I just go back to the safety things we talk on, and we've had so many rainstorms recently of very
Wait,
heavy.
And let me guess, and nobody putting their lights on during the storms.
Oh, I had that. That is, yeah. I would like everybody to know what kind of headlight system they've got in their car when they're sitting behind the steering wheel, and they know what goes on when it gets dark and what doesn't go on.
Yeah.
I was on the road recently behind a newish Toyota Camry, and the back lights were not on, so I figured, okay, they're driving lights on the front. I got occasion to pass that vehicle, and it was raining, and it was dark, and there was other traffic on the road. I got by it, and the headlights weren't on either.
No,
you know,
but the dashboard.
That is a ranting. That gets me ranting like nothing else.
I know,
because
me too. I just drove back from a couple times from New York this weekend and ran into some thunderstorms. So some cars are more obvious than others, but if you own a Toyota car or a Lexus, figure out how your lights work, because a lot of those cars are very dark in conditions that warrant lights on.
As are trucks, these Ford Transit vans. I went by one of those. It was dark. It was dark gray as well. And it had no front or rear lighting on it.
All right. We'll stop the rant. We'll see everybody next week.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.